From Autosport.com and Auto Magazine, I'm Kevin Turner, and this is the Autosport Podcast. Well, it's Le Mans week, the biggest race on the calendar, certainly for sports car fans, and I would suggest
for all motor racing fans.
Well, I didn't want to upset our Indy 500 and certain F1 diehards, but yeah, I'd say the Le Mans 24 Hours is the biggest motorsport event in the year. It's the 93rd running of the 24 Hours coming up this weekend, and we've just had the test day, and as you just heard there, a voice of Gary Watkins, who's already out of Le Mans. We had Ferrari topping the first session in the morning, Toyota getting the overall best in the afternoon. They were the two main protagonists for the last couple of years. So, Gary, can we say that Ferrari and Toyota on the back of the test day are the favourites going into this year's race?
Oh, well, I'm going to say Ferrari is still the favourite. Ferrari doesn't like that term. They like to say we're one of the favourites. And of course, you know, if you've won the opening three rounds of the WEC by an increasingly reduced margin or any reduced dominance, I would say, and you've also won the last two Le Mans 24 hours, you have to be the favourite. You know, there's no getting away from that. Toyota, of course, is the manufacturer that has pushed them hardest over the last 2 years. You know, had things swung the other way, they could possibly have won both. But certainly last year, you know, I think the number eight car that Brendan Hartley got sort of spun out or spun round at Mulsanne Corner in the closing stages of last year's race. Well, that car arguably was, you know, I'm not going to say moral winner because we should never use that term for Le Mans, but, you know, arguably should have won the race. So yes, those two are, I mean, let's say the test day has reinforced my opinion that those two are among the favorites and are going to be right up there. But of course, the test day is a notoriously bad indicator of form, even early in qualifying practice and qualifying week, let alone the race at the end of the week. You know, we've seen last year, for example, we saw Porsche, you know, pretty dominant at the test day, right up there. But then come the okay, Kevin Estre got pole position with an amazing lap, but in the race, okay, they finished fourth, but they weren't genuine victory contenders. They were certainly not as quick as Toyota and Ferrari. Sorry, Ferrari and Toyota, certainly not as quick as Cadillac. So they weren't genuine contenders, but at the test day, they were pretty much up there. But what I am going to say is that the test day has not ruled a lot of manufacturers out. I think we're going into race week with practice and qualifying starting tomorrow on Wednesday, with six of the eight manufacturers in hypercar still, in my mind, as genuine contenders, perhaps not for victory, but for podiums, to be up there fighting, to be in the mix. You know, I'm going to say that.
Yeah, which is obviously what we want. I mean, just I take the caveat of a test day can be misleading, but just for the record, it was 3 minutes 26.246 was the best lap that Brendan Hartley did in a number eight Toyota, and that was half a second clear of the 51 Ferrari. And the 83 Ferrari was third. The Alpine, the number 36 car, Mick Schumacher, was the quickest of the non-Ferrari Toyota cars, about a second off. But before we go further down the list, Gary, I'm not going to pretend to be a technical expert, but when I looked at when I looked at the balance of performance prior to the test day, the Ferrari is lighter and more powerful than it was at Spa and at Le Mans last year. So that seems slightly strange, and he's going to be quick. And the Toyota got quite a generous helping of BOP as well, didn't it? So it wasn't a huge shock to see those two up at
no,
the front.
No, you know, sort of minor tweaks to the Ferrari BOP, a significant tweak to the Toyota BOP, actually, in terms of power. It's got 12 more kilowatts, 16 more horsepower than last year. So that's very significant. So there are sort of, Yeah, I mean, looking at the BOP, you were thinking, that's interesting. Ferrari and Toyota.
I don't understand how that works. I know it's a simulation.
Quite well. But yeah, as you're saying, it's based on simulation. You know, let's just explain to the listeners that the BOP for the regular WEC races is based on an algorithm that the manufacturers are aware of. And it's based on 60% of laps, an average of 60% of laps, and a certain smaller amount of absolute fastest race laps. So the manufacturers can work out their own BOP. Well, Le Mans, because of the nature of the circuit, you know, Le Mans is, the Circuit de la Sarthe is quite unlike any other circuit in the world, certainly any other circuit on the WEC calendar, that has its own BOP, which is done by simulation, because obviously the race data from earlier in the season is less relevant to this one.
Yeah, and then looking further down that list then, I mean, if we've got Ferrari and Toyota as both the theoretical and actual favourites from the test day, Alpine up there with Mick Schumacher, but Porsche also right there as well. Like, they were basically the same, weren't they?
Yes.
So are we saying that they're the next best, or are you still just saying it's the top half dozen manufacturers?
Yeah, I mean, you know, people, they have 6 hours of running. You know, you've got to get through your test programs, which, you know, running on the tires is very important. Okay, they know these tires are in their third year, the current range of Michelin tires, but you know, you've got to run through your test program. You're going to have to be doing long runs. There'll be any other sort of amount of stuff you have to test. You've only got 3 hours, interrupted normally by various red flags and safety cars. We had three reds in the 3 hours of running yesterday afternoon, for example. And of course, you've got to cycle three drivers through the car. And these are long laps. So to do one flying lap, of course, is in excess of 10 minutes. Don't forget that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's a long old time, isn't it?
Which brings me to a brilliant story. Chip Ganassi did one Le Mans late in his career with Sauber Mercedes, and Max Felty, the team manager, told him, you know, his first run during qualifying, practice and qualifying, it was all the same back in those days. It says go out and do three laps. Well, three laps for Max Felty meant an out lap, a flying lap, and an in lap. Three laps for Chip Ganassi meant an out lap and three laps, and then an in lap. And so when he finally came in and he did have enough fuel to do it, Felty was absolutely revving at him. Well, what are you doing? I said three laps. He goes, yeah, I did three laps. No, you didn't. You did five laps. And of course, in those days, before the current pits were built in 1991, it was the old signalling pits down on the exit of Mulsanne Corner where you got the information from your team. And I'm sure for someone like Ganassi, that was quite unusual, and he probably wasn't quite on top of that. And so if he was getting a pit board, he probably didn't see it. But yeah, he certainly upset Max Felty, the team manager that year. But yeah, that it just illustrates my point, is that, you know, a lap is a long lap here, and, you know, ins and outs mean that, you know, flying laps, there aren't, you know, it takes a long time to get one on the board.
Yeah, absolutely. We should also say that as well as Toyota, Ferrari, Alpine and Porsche, we've also got a BMW and a Cadillac in the top 10, all within a second and a half or so, second half to 2 seconds of the pace. When you were on the ground, Gary, was there any team that seemed particularly either happy or not so happy of that group of six? Obviously, we'll come to the other two we've not mentioned in a moment. Was anyone giving anything away? They're all still playing cards close to their chest.
Not really. Cards close to their chest. Always with the caveat is this is a test. You know, we have shit to run through. Do you know what I mean? You know, we're not going for the times. You don't know who gets that really nice clear lap that allows them to do a quick time, or who's pushing, what fuel they're running, who did what time on what tires. You know, so people are saying, you know, we did our thing, we'll let the others do theirs. You know, wandering around the paddock yesterday trying to find stuff out, I didn't really find that much stuff out because there, you know, people are saying, well, yeah, we were doing our job yesterday, not focusing on other people. The most interesting thing I found out yesterday actually is that Jimmy Tarbuck is a sore loser at golf. The comedian Jimmy Tarbuck was a big golfer, and apparently used to play a lot in the sort of the sort of celebrity pro-am leagues, but took it rather seriously apparently. So that was the most interesting thing I learned yesterday, really.
Well, hopefully you'll be finding a few more interesting things during qualifying practice run up to the race this week, and be sure to tune into autosport.com and motorsport.com for updates as we go along from Gary, and he'll be joined by the rest of our team over the next couple of days. But one thing we can say, Gary, is we've said there are six still in it. Well, a couple of weeks ago when you did the magazine, your sort of magazine preview, which is out now, it's the July issue, it's got a rather nice Ferrari 499P on the front. At that stage you were still saying that any one of the eight manufacturers could be in it, but we've knocked that down to six. So why is that? Why have we lost two after the test day?
Yeah, we can draw a line through two of them. Probably not surprisingly, where I'm going to say that, you know, Aston Martin is not in the mix, you know, and we shouldn't be surprised, should we? You know, it's the first season of the Valkyrie, and based on what we've seen in the WEC so far, in the three rounds we've had so far, is that it's on a steep learning curve. You know, they're nibbling away. It looks, you know, they've got some reliability in the car. You know, they were sort of knocking around the top 10 at various stages of the race at Spa, so they're certainly on an upward curve. But yet now they've got to Le Mans. You know, Le Mans is Le Mans, isn't it? It's a different kettle of fish to the other circuits, so they've got a lot to learn. I never really expected them to be sort of surely not to win. No, we never were thinking them to win, but were we thinking they could be up there, you know, nipping at the heels of, you know, say BMW, Alpine, whoever? I don't think that's going to be the case. Now, the other line that we've been able to draw through a manufacturer is Peugeot. Now, some people are saying, well, yeah, Peugeot, the big underachiever in WEC, you know, they've been here nearly 3 years now, and what have they got to show for it? A couple of third place podiums. But that's the sort of ignore some of the form they've shown this year in WEC. You know, they could have had a podium at Spa. They had some pace there, and you know, as circuits, the closest circuit on the WEC calendar to Le Mans, of course, is Spa-Francorchamps. So we were thinking, maybe Peugeot can do something. You know, they're chasing that fourth win here after the two with the 905 and one with the 908 turbo diesel. But we've got here, and no, they're not in the mix. And am I surprised? Sort of no, looking at the BOP, because they've actually got a little bit of help in comparison to last year at Le Mans on the BOP. But significantly, their BOP is nowhere near as favourable as it has been in the WEC. So far this year. For the last two races, they've had the ultimate BOP, because they've been on the minimum weight of 1030 kilograms and up on the maximum power of 520 kilowatts, which in our money is 697 bhp. So they're at the, is that the top of the BOP or the bottom of the BOP? I don't know, but you know, they've had a favorable BOP. Now they're nowhere near that, and not surprisingly, certainly not to them, they're not on the pace. And you know, Duval was talking after the race, and after the test, and people saying, well, do you think you can get a podium? And he goes, well, not unless there's a massive thunderstorm and people starting having engine failures. Sort of that was his line. So they're going into the race thinking, nope, we haven't got a chance.
It raises a kind of almost philosophical question, that, doesn't it? Because obviously the WEC BOP is, as you say, based on a kind of rolling factual stuff, if you like, whereas the simulation approach, is that almost like the ACO saying, well, we think on paper your car actually is better than that and you need to get more out of it and we're not going to give you any more. If that kind of feels like what the message is, if they're not getting any help.
Yeah, it must be. It must be, mustn't it?
Yeah, yeah. We should also say about Aston Martin, they've already completed more laps than they managed with their last top prototype program with their AMR1, I believe. So
really?
It's a better start than that. Was that 2011, I think?
2011, yeah, the open top car, which of course had this amazing little straight six turbo engine, but they had sort of some issues with the pulley systems, you know, driving all the valve gear and water pumps and all that stuff. And they re-engineered them they were having problems with them and they re-engineered them for race morning. And all it did was put stresses into another. They had some new pulleys and then it just put stresses into the next bit along the chain or the belt, I suppose. And they broke. So that was a shame, that project, because I think it was a sort of dollar late and
a day late
and a dollar short. But I think, you know, people sort of look at it as it was a bad idea and, you know, it wasn't a good car. But I don't think that's quite true. I think it did have some promise. It just didn't have the correct timeline because it was all started very late and it didn't have the correct amount of money behind it.
Yeah, I was at Le Mans that year. I must admit, it was impressive through the corners. It looked quick through the corners, but it was just horrifically slow down the straights. And as you say, then obviously had reliability problems. So hopefully Aston Martin can get at least one of the Valkyries home come the race. Well, before we let you escape to get back to the track, Gary, we should probably just have a quick look at how the week's going to pan out, because there's a slightly different qualifying approach, isn't there? We're going to hear a lot less complaining about traffic, hopefully, with the top cars.
Yes. Yeah, so the big thing now is that there's a revision to the hyperpole qualifying system, the sort of short, sharp shock qualifying on Thursday evening. And it's now an extra round. So it's now a three round qualifying session. So we basically have what they're calling H1 and H2 on Thursday, after a certain amount of cars are knocked out during first qualifying on Wednesday. Now, the big thing for me is that they've separated out the hypercars from LMGT3 and LMP2, which wasn't the case previously. So that age-old excuse of traffic in the Porsche curves should be pretty much eradicated, to my mind. So before that first qualifying session, when everyone was on track, it was an hour for 62 cars. Now they've split it into two half hours. So the 21 hypercars get their own half hour, and the two other classes and the remainder of the field get their own half hour. And then we go into the sort of round system on Thursday evening with sort of double the jeopardy, because, you know, people are getting knocked out after the first round and then go through into the second round. So, yeah, you know, it is what it is, isn't it? You know, it's made for the modern age, particularly for a TV audience. I think, you know, it probably makes it more of a spectacle. You know, I used to love those final minutes as the clock ticked down at 12 o'clock during the old long time sort of qualifying structure at Le Mans, and suddenly a car would appear at the top of the times. Quite often Thomas Enger taking GT1 pole or GTS pole in a Ferrari or an Aston Martin as he just sort of pulled something out right at the end, quite often after he'd shunted earlier in the day and and the ProDrive team had sort of tape the car back together. You know, I'll miss that. But of course, you know, having a car doing that at midnight, 1 minute to midnight, or quite often after the checkered flag, 1 minute past midnight, is not great TV, is it? You know, you need your qualifying to be at a set time, you know. So clearly this is made for TV, isn't it?
But I also like it from the point of view of that we'll get. I've read many of your reports over the years and your predecessors, Gary, and then almost every single Le Mans report has a such and such was on a quick lap, only to find a dithering GT car at the Porsche curves or something like that ruined a potentially awesome, you know, record smashing or pole equaling or something lap. So we won't get any of that. We'll just get a, you know, we'll get a pure read of the pace of the cars. Well, as pure as we're ever going to get at Le Mans. And I know it's irrelevant for a 24-hour race, but it's also kind of cool.
Yeah, because, you know, pole at Le Mans sort of has, okay, it's the biggest race of the season, so that gives it an extra worth. But I think it has an extra worth because you're on pole for longer. Do you know what I mean? Because there's a day off on Friday. And so you get the headlines in the French local, you know, the regional dailies here. You know, it's a big thing being on pole because you're not on pole for a few, you know, for 12 hours or whatever as you might be at a normal race. You're on pole for, you know, so you're actually on pole for nearly 2 days, aren't you? Because, you know, the race doesn't start till 4 and the qualifying's on Thursday on evening. So you are Le Mans pole winner for a long time. And that, I think that's why it's so significant, you know, and I just think you go to the pole winner, pole winners, of course, in class, then you go to the parade in town on Friday evening as the pole winner, you know. So it's sort of, that gives it extra worth, doesn't it?
Yeah, and of course you're going to have many more eyeballs at the start of the race, aren't you? We said it's the biggest race that you're going to have 300,000 plus people there. Goodness knows how many people tuning in to watch it around the world. And it's pretty good for your manufacturer, your team, your sponsors, whatever, to be leading those early laps. I mean, Jan Lammers always used to get himself stuck up at the front wherever he qualified in those first few laps to grab a few headlines.
In his domes, didn't he? When he was driving the dome. And he actually did something similar when he was driving, when he won in 88 in the Jaguar. They adjusted the ride height, and that car found a lot of straight line speed, which was, you know, had a role to play in its victory. I once asked Martin Brundle, who was in the other car, said, "Name me one racing car that you'd wish you could have driven during your career," and he said, "The winning Jag,
the number two car,
and not my car because it had more straight line speed."
Well, who found the tweak? That would be the question. So, who came up with that, with the ride height tweak?
Well, I think that they did it very late after the morning warm up, or they hit upon it on the morning warm up. I have talked about this. And I've actually got someone actually showed me I have somewhere a fax that someone sent me the setup sheet many, many years later. Alistair McQueen, who obviously had a role at TWR Jaguar for years and years, can't actually remember if he was engineering that car that year. But I have written this, so if you Google it, listeners, you can probably find the story I wrote about this somewhere.
Yeah, it's very cool. I remember I've watched the start of that race quite a few times over the years because obviously Porsche with their rather splendid yellow and red 962s, the shell cars, 1, 2, 3 on the grid, and then Lammers just picks them off one by one in the early laps. It's fantastic to watch, actually. But anyway, we've gone down a nostalgic path there when we're looking ahead to the 93rd running of the 24 hours. I should just say that LMP2 in testing was topped by the number 22 United Autosports car. United Autosports always going to be in the mix, aren't they? And LMGT3 was topped by the ASP team Lexus ahead of two Ferraris. I guess, Gary, we can't really go into picking out. I mean, we should say that LMP2, obviously, it's a kind of a guest return because they're not part of the World Endurance Championship anymore. But, I mean, you've got good drivers and good teams that are all very evenly matched. Obviously, in LMP2, they're all Orica Gibsons. And in LMGT3, they're more balanced performance. So picking out a potential winner from those classes at this stage is probably even more difficult than it is from the top class, isn't it?
Well, I think if you look at P2, you know, basically anyone who does anything in P2 around the world is on the grid for this race. You know, ELMS champions, Asian Le Mans champions, people who excel in P2 in IMSA over in North America. Reading into LMGT3, it's difficult. It appears to me that ASP had a bit of a push, and were actually going for times that they were sort of doing some quali sims during the test, which might explain why they were top of both sessions and the margin that Lopez had in the second session. So again, you know, not too much to read into that, but
Yeah. No, but three Ferraris in the top five in LMGT3 and three Ferraris in the top seven in hypercar. So if you're a Ferrari fan, you're definitely going to be wanting to tune in this weekend. Yes. So right, well, we're gonna let Gary Watkins escape and head to the track. Thank you very much for that, Gary. And I'm sure we'll be hearing from you or reading from you, as it were. Can you read from someone? Not sure about that. No, but anyway, look out for what Gary's doing over this week and the weekend. And as I say, he'll be joined by the rest of the Autosport team in the next day or two. So we'll keep you up to date with everything that's happening. Thank you very much for listening and tuning in. We'll be back soon with another Autosport podcast.